and dusty clumps of tired gray bushes. Fee's stoical eyes surveyed the scene without changing expression, but poor Meggie's were full of tears. It was horrible, fenceless and vast, without a trace of green. From freezing night it turned to scorching day as the sun climbed toward its zenith, and the train racketed on and on and on, stopping occasionally in some tiny town full of bicycles and horse-drawn vehicles. Cars were scarce out here, it seemed. Patty opened both the windows all the way in spite of the soot which swirled in and settled on everything. It was so hot they were gasping, their heavy New Zealand winter clothing sticking and itching. It did not seem possible that anywhere outside of hell could be so hot in winter. Gill and Bone came with the dying sun, a strange small collection of ramshackle wooden and corrugated iron buildings along either side of one dusty, wide street, treeless and tired. The melting sun had licked a golden paste over everything and gave the town a transient gilded dignity, which faded even as they stood on the platform watching. It became once more a typical settlement on the very edge of the back of beyond, a last outpost in a steadily diminishing rainfall belt. Not far away westward began 2,000 miles of the Never Never, the desert lands where it could not rain. A resplendent black car was standing in the station yard, and striding unconcernedly toward them, through the inches-deep dust, came a priest. His long soutane made him seem a figure out of the past, as if he did not move on feet like ordinary men, but drifted dreamlike. The dust rose and billowed around him, red in the last of the sunset. "Hello, I'm Father de Bricassart," he said, holding out his hand to Patty. "You have to be Mary's brother. You're the living image of her." He turned to Fee and lifted her limp hand to his lips, smiling in genuine astonishment. No one could spot a gentlewoman quicker than Father Rafe. "Why, you're beautiful," he said, as if it were the most natural remark in the world for a priest to make. And then his eyes went onward to the boys, standing together in a huddle. They rested for a moment with puzzled bewilderment on Frank, who had charge of the baby, and ticked off each boy as they got smaller and smaller. Behind them, all by herself, Meggie stood gaping up at him, with her mouth open, as if she were looking at God. Without seeming to notice how his fine serge robe wallowed in the dust, he stepped past the boys and squatted down to hold Meggie between his hands, and they were firm, gentle, kind.